I'll give credit where credit is due. Holly put together a speech at FB that sort of accumulated all the events of my mother's life. Most of them I knew, but in speaking with her last night, there were a couple of things that she told me that I never knew. One other thing that I discovered as I went down through her life and I thought of the things that I want to say was there was sort of an awakening of emotions within me that I realized that a lot of people used my mom in terrible ways, but there were a few people who used my mom in ways that portray Christ. And the emotions come within me are stirred more from the people that helped my mom than the people that hurt my mom and her family. So bear with me if those emotions are awakened as I go down through her life. My mother was born in Poland in 1943, and she lived there in Poland. They called it Brzezinsk, Poland, is where she was born. That's what's on her birth certificate, but you can't Google that word the way it is spelled on her birth certificate. So I'm not exactly sure the location in Poland. When she was 2 years old, they were forced, the authorities came through, because they were sympathizers and they had some German blood in them, they were forced to move. And they had a few hours of time to prepare for this. So I called them Opa, Adolf, and Ida was my grandmother. And Adolf had a few hours to go out and get his wagon together and hitch up the best of the oxen that he had. And he opened up the corn crib where the feed was in, and he opened all the gates to the farm, so that at least the animals would have something to eat, if nothing else. And so, at the same time, my mother had a sister who was a few weeks old. I think she was 2 or 3 weeks old. And my grandmother could not give the child any nourishment through feeding. She simply couldn't do it on the trip. It was too strenuous, it was too stressful, and she had no milk for her baby. The only option she had was to give her sister coffee. So for the 2 weeks that they spent traveling from Poland to Germany for 2 weeks, my aunt survived on coffee only. It was the only thing that child had was coffee. She survived and she made it fine. But once the problem with them coming to Germany is that they were unwanted by everybody. Nobody wanted these people who were coming into this country. And so what happened was the authorities had to go out and find places for all these people to live. So they would go up and they would notice the farmer had two houses, which was one too many in their mind. And they would go to the farmer and they would say, in so many hours, we're putting a family in this house. Get everything and everybody out that you want out of the house. But this family is coming. And this angered the farmer where my grandpa and grandma were sent to. It made him extremely bitter because he didn't like them and they were an intrusion. But they moved in, but this farmer was so evil, and everything they did seemed to make him mad. And one of the things that is typical of immigrants like this is that they're poor. They had absolutely nothing to live on. And so many of the situations, they had to go against their conscience. They had to go and steal. And one of the things, there were three things that my mother really dealt with. It was hunger, it was anger, and shame. And so we're going to talk about those three different things and the things that made her feel those emotions. So at the farmer's house, the farmer, he raised chickens and he sold eggs. But of course they had no money to buy these eggs. There were a few. The government did give some food stamps out to my grandpa and grandma, and they could buy some things. But with all the children, they simply didn't have enough food stamps to go around. And so my mom, at nighttime, she would go over to the chicken house when all was quiet, and she would bring eggs back to the house. She would steal eggs. And, you know, and even to this day, I remember as a little boy, my mom telling me this, is that she's still so ashamed that she had to go steal. You know, it still bothers her conscience to this day that she had to go steal. Anyways, and so what the farmer would do, as some of us do, we lay plastic white eggs into the pens to sort of initiate the location and the idea of laying eggs. And so my mom, she would come home with these plastic eggs. And so the farmer would go out, and he noticed that his plastic eggs were missing. Well, vermin usually don't eat the plastic eggs, so he became suspicious that somebody was coming into the chicken house and stealing eggs. And my mom would always say, okay, now look, Reinhilde, this is the plastic egg. Don't bring these home. These have to stay there. And so the next trip over, she would go back and she'd try to put them in the right pens. But the farmer noticed this activity going on. He became suspicious. Well, he soon discovered what my mom was up to. And, of course, with much harsh words and threatenings of beatings, he made the family very well aware that this was not going to be acceptable. Well, so that sort of was eliminated from her life. They couldn't have eggs anymore. She couldn't steal eggs. So the next thing that she would often, she was always hungry, like I am almost always hungry. But one of the things that she would do when she would walk to school is that the farmer had a cherry tree that grew right beside the fence. The tree was on the other side of the fence, but its limbs full of red cherries hung down, and she could just reach them. And the sidewalk went right underneath the tree. And so why wouldn't you stop and pick a few cherries? So she would stop on her way to school and back from school. She would stop and she would grab those cherries and she would eat them. And one day the farmer came along. And of course, if you take enough cherries off the bottom, you can sort of see that something is happening. You know, like in a woods with cattle, you can see something's eating the leaves off. Well, he noticed that his cherries were being taken. And so he lay in wait for her. And when she came past there to pick those cherries, he jumped out at her and he threatened her and just chewed her out for being a thief. And there again, a lot of shame being felt. And so, and the other thing that she would do, after this was eliminated, she, of course, the children are still hungry. But her mom told her to go over to the neighbors. And they asked, and she went over to the neighbors, and they said, my mom said, just go over. My grandma said to my mother, just go over and ask them if you can have any food from, you know, if they can feed you anything. So my mom went over to the neighbor, and she knocked on the door, and they opened the door, and she said, I'm so hungry. Do you have any food for me to eat? And they said, well, we have very little. But if you come in and sit underneath our table while we eat, after the meal is done, then you can have whatever food is left over on our table. And don't you know, every once in a while, there were a few crumbs left. And my mother, after they would leave, she'd come up, crawl up underneath that table, sit on a chair, and the table would be wiped clean. And this happened over and over, but every time, they didn't want her to be a distraction, so every time she'd have to sit under that table, she was invisible. But after the meal, she came out and she fed her hungry stomach. Now, this was when she was about, she guessed it to be between the ages of 4 and 7 that a lot of this stealing of the eggs, eating of the cherries, and sitting under their neighbor's table until they were done eating. Well, like I said, this farmer wouldn't only take his anger out on the people who were stealing, but he would take his anger out on the other family members. And so, there was two incidences that were very violent. He caught, I'm not exactly sure what the farmer caught her brother doing. Maybe it's a little bit later here, I'll tell you, but he took my brother and beat his head against the wall. He caught him in a stairwell, and he just beat his head against the wall. He was so angry and became very violent. Once he almost killed Ida, which is my grandma. He almost killed her. He got a little skateboard, and he beat her across the head. And she was black and blue, not just her head, but her body, and she was black and blue. And I think this was just a culmination of he was discovering that this family who he gave up his house to them, but they're stealing from me yet on top of that. And it was just too much for him. He just couldn't deal with that. One of the other things that happened is that her she had a brother who is schizophrenic, and they think that a lot of the trauma that he went through as a young boy contributed to him becoming schizophrenic. Another incident that would happen is that they didn't have any bread. And so my mom would be forced to go down with her sister to the local baker. And the local baker, they would go down and they'd say, you know, we have no money, but we are terribly hungry. Could you give us a loaf of bread? And my mom told me last night that she doesn't think that the baker ever turned them down. But they knew better to take the adults. So grandpa and grandma would just send my mother down there because they felt they had a better chance of getting bread if the poor, raggedy, hungry, hollow-eyed children would walk in and ask for bread. And that was another thing that my mother had to do to help the family survive. The other thing that happened that my mother was not involved in, but her brothers, every 2 to 3 weeks, there would be a man that would come around, and he would buy junk. He would just stop in and ask, do you have any junk to sell? And he would have his little scales there, and he paid him a couple pennies a pound for junk. Well, her brothers saw all the neighbors' machinery sitting out in the pasture, and they decided that a few nuts and bolts off of that machinery surely wouldn't hurt. And so they would assemble between the coming and goings of this junk man, they would assemble a few nuts and bolts from that machinery out there. And as you can imagine, that this soon was a revelation to the farmer as well, that they were stealing, because they finally had a lot of his machinery immobilized, because they would have these huge piles. If a few nuts and bolts were good, then a whole bunch were much better. So they would sell all this junk to the man, and then they had a little bit of money, and then they could go buy a little bit more bread. My mom told me that often, to this day, she loves the crust of the bread. And she said that those little loaves of bread were about 12 and 14 inches long. And even last night, you know, she was almost ashamed to tell me, but she said that her and her sister would often have that crust almost all peeled off and eaten by the time they got back to the house. And the rest of them had to eat the soft part of the bread. But she said they were always hungry, always hungry. Well, one of the things that happened then, as they were there until she was 12, and then they were moved to Esplanade, is where they were moved to. It was an old army barracks. And they converted into housing. So a lot of people were taken off the farms then and moved into these old army barracks at Esplanade. And don't you know, there were a group of people who would bring food into these people that were in Esplanade. And it was MCC that brought food in. And my mother finally had enough food to eat after they moved there. And so she sort of fell in love with these people who fed them. She didn't have to go beg anymore. She didn't have to have her brothers sell nuts and bolts off the farmer's machinery, neighbor's machinery to have bread. And so she sort of fell in love with MCC. And so one of the things that she soon discovered was of the Mennonites. And she became acquainted with them. She really liked the youth. And so it's one of the things that as I see my mother respond to the generosity that was extended to her, is that she is really generous to this day. Sometimes You know, growing up, the cupboards were always full. Everybody that came to our house had more than they could eat. And, you know, they just couldn't eat enough for my mom because she felt, I think that she sort of has felt a sort of, she almost feels redeemed when she can give because of her thievery that she was involved in. So, my dad, she came to America, and my father met her at a Bible school, and they could both play table tennis, and so they started playing table tennis with each other, and my father fell in love with her, and in 1965, they were married, and they didn't have their paperwork together, so my father, after they were married, came to America for 13 months after they were married, and then when my mom finally got her paperwork done in Germany, and then she could come over and join. One of the things that I want to just sort of in conclusion talk about, one of the things that probably stirred my emotions the most, and that is the baker. So they would go down to this baker, as I said before, this is the same baker, and my mom would walk in there and they would ask the baker for bread, and my mom knew that they had a debt to pay because of the last time they were there that he gave them bread. So she said he would go back into his little room and he'd come out and her sister would stand there and he'd do it the same thing every time. He'd get his book out and he'd page through his book for all the people that owed him money for bread. And then finally he would get out his big dough-covered finger and he'd read there and he'd say, you know, last time you didn't pay for your bread and you owe me some money. And she said, yeah, they know that they owe them some money. And then he would go and he would give them bread. Despite the debt that he owed, that they owed to him. And it makes me conscious of a couple things. One is that we all have opportunities to be a baker in our own lives. As I think of people who do things for us, even though that we have a debt, whether it's a spiritual debt, whether it's a debt of forgiveness, whether it's a debt of redemption, we all take our turns, whether we have the debt or we can forgive the debt. And I don't know if that baker understood what he was doing, but it makes me pause to think that he contributed to my mother's life by giving her crusty bread and hope to live. My mother had never told me that story, and I wondered sometimes, the older I get, the more she tells me these stories, and I don't know, it's always interesting for me to talk to my mom, the older I get, because she seems to be able to talk about more of the pain and some of the shame that she had to endure as a young child. But I'm glad that my mom tells me these stories because it makes me aware that within all of humanity, there are certain things that just don't change. And especially among Christians, where forgiveness is such a big part of who we are and why we are what we are, if we think of what Christ did for us. And I'm glad that my mom's, even though it was rough for her, it has spoken loudly to my life and about some of the things that I've struggled with in my life, not wanting to accept people and being sort of racist and having a tendency to not want to forgive. And when my mother tells me these stories, it speaks loudly to me. And I'm thankful that those voices and my mom still speak to me, and hopefully they'll speak to you as well. Thank you for your time.